You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, November 2nd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Aaron Kleinman, Director of Research for Future Now. How to watch the election returns. And with a definitive answer as to who will win. Well, maybe not on that last one. Friday smashes COVID infection rate in this country. Nearly 100,000 people infected on Friday. Meanwhile, Fauci has more or less left the building. Trump's talking now he'll fire him if he, well, maybe either way after the election. Meanwhile, Biden's polling holds firm. He's up in Pennsylvania. He's barely up in Arizona, up in Colorado, supposedly up in Florida. But who knows? Despite all that, Trump plans to call for an early victory on election night as legal armies assemble to fight in courts. The Supreme Court denied the Republican request to toss 130,000 ballots in Texas, in Harris County, Texas. Very blue area. Federal judge orders the post office to enforce extreme measures to deliver ballots. And the Kentucky State Police have a too much Hitler in their training program problem. And meanwhile, the Trump campaign has a we keep branding our rally goers because we don't pay for buses problem. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, folks. It is a new week and a very consequential week. I think most of you know that tomorrow is what we call the election day. Traditionally, it was the day where most people would go and vote. And this year, however, in many states, most people have already voted. Still anticipating almost half of the electorate to come out tomorrow, or at least the people who intend to vote. But we have smashed all sorts of records in terms of early votes across the country. It has really been stunning. Multiple states now, it appears, have beat their 2016 tally already. And they haven't even had in-person, or I should say, election day voting. And so I don't know, we're going to read off some polls today, but I don't think that there is really, I think, you know, if Joe Biden wins in a landslide, we're going to hear a lot from pollsters and political scientists that this was quite obvious and that it was all the numbers were there and we should have seen it. The stability of the polls for Joe Biden that haven't really changed substantially on a national level in about 2 or 3 weeks. The disfavor in which Donald Trump is viewed, both in terms of just his general likability at this point and also things like how are you handling the major pandemic that we're dealing with. In many of these state polls that often broke away from Hillary Clinton in 2016. In many of them, not all of them, Joe Biden is over 50%. So Monmouth today, for instance, we have a poll where Joe Biden's at 51.9%. Trump is at 43%. That's a 9-point advantage with a margin of error of 2 percentage points. That's a substantial lead. But back when Hillary Clinton had a lead in Pennsylvania in 2016, I don't know if it was ever actually 9, to be honest with you, but she wasn't over 50%. So, for instance, in North Carolina, Joe Biden has a 1% lead. It's a 2% margin of error, and they're both under 50%. Biden has 49.1. Trump has 48.4. Again, this is the Monmouth poll. And when you're under 50%, generally, it has been the rule that undecideds break for the challenger, but we don't know. And we also just don't know how many people's ballots will not be counted. We don't know in a state like Pennsylvania. We don't have a sense of this yet. We don't know if those ballots that will be sequestered, because Republicans asked for any ballots that come in, they're postmarked, obviously need to be postmarked by Election Day, but any ballots that come in or not counted by 8 p.m. would be separated. So that presumably their Supreme Court would have a crack at saying those ballots are invalidated. There's also reports, though, in some of the biggest counties in Pennsylvania, they are desperately trying to count these ballots even early, although I think Pennsylvania state law, or at least the way that they've been running their elections in the past, they don't start counting the ballots until later. Florida, Arizona, North Carolina, they are counting their absentee ballots as they come in. Aaron Kleinman will walk us through a lot of this, and he will do so better than I can. So we'll save it for him. However, let's take a look at some of the closing arguments, I guess you could say, of the Trump campaign. Here he is. Donald Trump in on the tarmac in Hickory, North Carolina. And we're going to be talking about, and hopefully you've heard about the blue mirage and the red mirage, and then the blue shift and the red shift. And this all has to do with the perception, and I'm not 100% sure it's true. We can talk to Aaron about this. The perception that the mail-in ballots and election day voting are polarized on a partisan basis. In other words, that the vast majority of mail-in ballots are from Democrats and the vast majority of election day ballots are going to be from Republicans. And it's starting to appear that that's not the case. In which case, of this notion of a blue or red mirage, it's going to be a double mirage. The mirage may not be a mirage, but the idea is that Donald Trump now, it's been reported by Axios, is looking to declare victory on Tuesday night if it appears that he has more ballots that have been counted for him as opposed to just actual votes in the entirety of the election. But here he is on Saturday, really starting to try and invalidate the idea that you could have a legally cast ballot, but if it takes too long to count it, it really shouldn't count because the anxiety of waiting to find out if I'm president, I guess, is just should be illegal.
Because it can only lead to one thing, and that's very bad. You know what that thing is. I think it's a very dangerous, terrible thing. And I think it's terrible when we can't know the results of an election the night of the election in a modern day age of computer. I think it's a terrible thing. And I happen to think it was a terrible decision for our country made by the Supreme Court. I think it was a terrible decision for our country. And I think it's a very dangerous decision because you're going to have one or two or three states, depending on how it ends up, where they're tabulating ballots and the rest of the world is waiting to find out. And I think there's great danger to it. And I think a lot of fraud and misuse can take place. I think it's a terrible decision by the Supreme Court. A terrible decision. Now, I don't know if that's going to be changed because we're going to go in the night of, as soon as that election's over, we're going in with our lawyers. But we don't want to have Pennsylvania where you have a political governor, a very partisan guy. And we don't want to have other states like Nevada where you have the head of the Democratic clubhouse as your governor. We don't want to be in a position where he's allowed to every day watch ballots come in. Gee, if we could only find 10,000 more ballots. Because we're doing great in Nevada. We're doing great in Arizona. We're doing great all over. But if you take Nevada or Pennsylvania, and everyone knows what happens in Philadelphia. You don't have to say it. But I've read about it for years. And I don't think it's fair that we have to wait a long period of time after the election. If people wanted to get their ballots in, they should have gotten their ballots in long before that, a long time. They don't have to put their ballots in the same day. They could have put their ballots in a month ago. And we think it's a ridiculous decision. Thank you.
Well, they actually couldn't get their ballots in a month ago. I don't know that. I mean, I think there are some states where maybe about a month ago they started to do early balloting, but you couldn't even get your absentee ballots in, at least in New York. You couldn't even order them until fairly recently. And he won't say what's going on in Philadelphia. Does anybody have any idea what's going on in Philadelphia? It's like with cheesesteaks? What's happening in Philadelphia?
It looks so bad, you don't even have to say it.
Well, it's good, as long as nobody has to say it. But he is, he's basically, you know, talking about what the strategy is. As soon as the, we're going to stop the election. If there's a moment where the vote count has us in the lead, is essentially his plan. I mean, folks, it's very important for everybody to keep in mind what we've seen, not just in Florida in 2000, but even look at the Kristen Sinema, Martha McSally race. She thought she had won it on the night of the election, except for the problem is ballots get counted. And sometimes ballots come in late from areas that are strong for one candidate or another. And then 2 weeks later, she is not the senator from Arizona. I mean, these type of things happen all the time in our elections. It's just usually what happens is so many ballots have come in. They are breaking in a consistent way. We know the history of certain areas and the way that they vote. We know that those are the votes that have yet to come in. And so media outlets make projections. But it's not an official result. And even if the candidates say, I concede, you can't. There's no, like, I concede. I didn't win enough ballots. And then the next day or a week later, the Secretary of the State says, hey, well, no, actually, we've counted the ballots. You won. Oh, but I said I lost. So we've got to stick with that. That's not the way it works. And we're only now in this era starting to have elections. And by this era, I mean the past 20 years that are so close that these issues start to arise, that we start to realize, like, we have a problem with the way that we vote in this country. We have a problem with disparate laws. We have a problem with this type of widespread disenfranchisement because our elections are getting closer. And now each vote is that much more meaningful. And so people need to be in that mentality. Hopefully it won't come down to that. And maybe Aaron will tell us about that when we get to him. But first, a couple of words from our sponsors. This is a total coincidence today. Yesterday, I was like, I'm going to, in the midst of all the anxiety, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to shave today just to make myself feel like I'm keeping it together. It's like that's the old move. When you're falling apart in the inside, I mean, there's just too much anxiety, right? So I decided to shave. Harry's has just come out with their sharpest blades ever. And here's the good news from Harry's. They're not going to charge you a dime more for their product improvements. Their new sharper blades are still as low as $2. We've been talking about Harry's on this program for, I don't know, how many years now. But you know the things I love about it. I love the trimmer blade head. That's important for me. I got some nostril issues that have got to be there. I like the classic quality of the blade handle. The blades are smooth, are super sharp, but also the glide helps me quite a bit. And of course, I don't like paying a lot of money, and it's super easy. They send them right to you. Their new blades are so sharp that in a study with guys shaving four times a week, the guys reported that with Harry's new blades, their eighth shave was as smooth as their first. Harry's owns a German factory that's been honing razor blades for 100 years. They source their steel from Sweden, and they own the entire manufacturing process, allowing them to keep prices low. Harry's is convenient. Like I say, they deliver the blades directly to your door on a schedule, with or without a subscription. They confidently stand by a 100% quality guarantee on harrys.com. Give Harry's sharpest blades ever a try. They have an amazing offer for our listeners. New U.S. customers can redeem a Harry's trial set at harrys.com/majority report. You'll get a 5-blade razor. That's with their new sharper blades. You get the weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blade when you're on the go. Just go to harrys.com/majority report. One word, majority report. Redeem your trial offer today. Also, I've been hitting the liquid IV hard these days. So Halloween got a little out of hand for me. I mean, it was just me basically sitting around with my friend John, and we drank a little too much. But in the morning, what do I do? Liquid IV. And what am I doing every day on this program? One of my glasses filled with the energy multiplier. You know how it is. When you're pushing your body, you're feeling run down, really important to take care of yourself with proper vitamins and nutrients, particularly these days. And that's why Liquid IV created the Hydration Multiplier Plus Immune Support to maintain and strengthen your immune system. I've been trying to, like, I've been taking vitamins and doing all that kind of stuff. I'm actually doing a little bit of exercise these days because I'm doing my knee rehab. It's knee rehab exercise, but I'm doing all this stuff, and it makes me feel good that I'm also keeping myself hydrated. So many mornings I'll take the immune support, then I turn around and I get the energy multiplier. That's the way I do it. That's the way I do it. They got great flavors too. The Hydration Multiplier Plus Immune Support is a blend of vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, and Wellmune in convenient single serving packets. C, D, and zinc, you probably know, they're great for your immune system. I take a lot of zinc when I get a cold. And so is Wellmune. It's a naturally sourced beta-glucan that's proved to help strengthen your immune system. Plus, each packet is bursting with fresh, natural tangerine flavor. Tastes super good, folks. And with every purchase, Liquid IV donates a serving of Liquid IV to someone in need. In response to COVID-19, products are being donated to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, active military, everybody. Liquid IV's new Hydration Multiplier Plus Immune Support is available at Walmart, or you get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MajorityRep. It's majority rep at checkout. It's 25% off anything you order when you use the promo code majority rep at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today. liquidiv.com, majority report, promo code majority rep. just majority rep. They don't want that org part. Majority rep. And then lastly, election time, big decisions being made. Sometimes you like to phrase it like we're hiring a new president. Well, if you're hiring, but not necessarily a president, hiring somebody for your small business or even your, like, you know, medium-sized business, I guess. It's, you know, that it's a huge pain in the butt. Thankfully, there's ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. First, what happens is you post a job on ZipRecruiter. It gets sent out to over 100 job sites with just one click. Then what happens is ZipRecruiter has this powerful matching technology. It finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and then actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. That's exactly what happened right on this program. Brendan, who is sitting somewhere in some apartment somewhere. I haven't seen Brendan in 6 months, 7 months. Still doing a crack job, though. We got Brendan from ZipRecruiter. Came in, bingo, bango. I interviewed probably maybe a dozen people. All of them were really good, but Brendan was just better. No due respect. I mean, no misrespect. You know what I'm saying?
All due respect.
All due respect to those people. But, I mean, that's the thing. It was a wealth of riches. Is that the way you say that? It's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Folks, I've told you this before. The best time to start this process is when you don't need anybody. Small business people leave, give you 2 weeks' notice. It's tricky. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Head over there. Try it out. You may be stressed out about the election, but you will not be stressed out about hiring when you try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. Okay. Want to welcome to the program? Do we have Aaron? I don't know who that is. Oh, okay. Joining us now, Aaron Kleinman, Director of Research for Future Now. Aaron, are you with us?
Hey, Sam, I'm here. How you doing?
Good. I can't really see you. You know? Oh, there you are.
Perfect.
I see you really dressed up for this. I appreciate that. Now, you must be very busy these days crunching numbers. And I know, look, we should tell people that that Future Now, you focus on the state of the states, as you call it.
Yeah, we focus on state legislatures.
And so I want to talk about that, but you're also a numbers guy, and I'm sure that you you have your way in which you're going to be watching the election. And I'm also going to ask you to tell me the key counties again. I know I did that a couple of weeks ago, but people forgot, and I lost a piece of paper. So you're going to have to do that. But all right, you and I spoke, I don't know what it was, like maybe a month ago. Has anything changed? Let's talk just in terms of the national races first, and then we'll go down to the states if that's okay with you.
Sounds good.
Has anything changed? Has there been any significant change? I mean, because it seems to me like the dynamic has been pretty static.
It has. No, you're right. This has been the most stable presidential race in living memory. I know that for someone who lives through 2020, it's hard to imagine anything being stable. But, you know, if you think of this election at the national level, it is a single issue election. And that issue is that Donald Trump is president. And people have pretty baked in views about that. And so what we've been seeing, I mean, you know, I started looking at district level polling for our candidates in like June. And when we get those back, we see Biden top lines in them. And I remember in June looking at some of these and I'm like, oh, wow, he's not big in this district that Trump carried in 2016.
All right. So wait, let me just be clear on what you're talking about. So when you're saying district level, you're talking congressional districts, yes?
Or state legislative level district.
Okay. So these are small districts, and they're specific ones that you guys have targeted because you know they are like basically bellwethers.
Yeah, they're going to be, you know, we knew that they would be the closest races in their chambers and determine who controls legislative chambers. So they tend to be in pretty, you know, especially because they tend to be gerrymandered. They tend to be in areas that Trump won disproportionately. And we keep getting back polls where, you know, even if Biden isn't ahead, he's improving on his on Clinton's 2016 performance. And it's a pretty common, you know, and it's just been happening since June. I can count on one hand the number of polls I've seen where Trump seems to actually be doing better in a district than he did in 2016. And so we've known for a while that Trump really hasn't grown his voting base while Democrats have. And so that means that heading into tomorrow and the days thereafter, I think we're going to see, you know, a good Democratic year. And again, I think I'm hopeful that all the resources that we invested in making it so that these candidates can take advantage of a good Democratic year will bear fruit. And I'm hopeful that we can flip a lot of state legislative seats as well.
So when you're looking at these sort of swingy districts, is there any way, I mean, because one of the things that I think that we hear in terms of there are two basically major factors, it seems to me, that give at least lay people anxiety about the polling that we see. I mean, and all of this is obviously because in 2016, people were surprised. But one is the idea that we have voter suppression. So how do we account for that when we look at these polls? And the second is I've seen reports of increased registration amongst Republicans versus Democrats, and particularly in some key states. So, maybe the Michigans and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania in particular, I think. How do you, as a pollster or someone who analyzes polls, I guess I should say, how do you fold that into your analysis?
So I'll tackle the registration stuff first. So voter registration, actually, it's a lagging indicator. People tend to switch the parties that they're registered with after they've already started voting differently. And so if you actually look at past elections and you compare changes in voter registration to changes in the outcome, there is no correlation at all. So I just don't worry about, it's like I care about new registrations. Yeah.
Registrations, aren't they?
So the numbers that people are seeing are net changes overall. And a lot of that is due to, especially like in a state like Pennsylvania, if you look at 2015 there, for example, you have all these like 70% Trump counties that still voted Democratic at the local level. People were registered Democrats because they want to vote for, like, in their local sheriff primary and stuff like that. And they've been doing that for 20 years. And so the Trump era has accelerated a lot of the movement away from Democratic registration in traditionally conservative areas like that. So that accounts for a lot of the changes are things like that. I mean, I think until recently, the majority of West Virginia voters were still registered Democrats. And so I don't worry too much about voter registration. It was a little unnerving to see new voter registration take a dip once COVID start hitting, but we've been seeing such good, especially early turnout from newly registered voters. I think that kind of cancels out. So I don't worry about that much.
No, we're getting less new registrations, but a higher yield of those people.
The people who did register before COVID kind of really shut things down have been turning out at higher rates than we expected. So that, I think, it kind of cancels that out. And then on your first question, voter suppression. Allow me to identify the source of everyone's malcontents. And so you and I talked about the Powell memo before.
This is Lewis Powell memo wrote back in 1972, I think it was, sort of outlining a response to the emancipation movements that were happening, like social emancipation movements, and also economic the what they call the Great Compression, as it were. So go ahead.
Yeah. So two of the big prongs of the Powell memo and its blueprint for conservatives taking over government and enshrining minority rule were taking over the courts and taking over state legislatures. And then if you fast forward to 2020, you are seeing the fruit, the conservative movement planted those seeds and now it's bearing the fruit because it has right-wing judges saying, in some instances, the only people who can set laws around voting in states and we might throw out ballots are the state legislatures. And so, again, I want to bring it back to state legislatures because you really want to see Democrats make big gains in state legislatures in 2020 if you want your 2024 election night to be a lot smoother. You will be in a much better mood 4 years from now if Democrats flip a lot of state legislative seats because you are tackling the conservative movement at it. You know, you're tackling at the like this the state legislatures are the foundation of the conservative movement. And if you can flip state legislatures, you can take that out. And that is that will hopefully force them to have some type of reckoning and become a party somewhat interested in democracy again.
I'm not going to hold my breath for that last part, but but I would rather just not have them in a position to really make a choice about it.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, I've spent a decent part of my adult life in rural areas, you know, where the town, they're like, hey, let's get Bill to run for town supervisor and this and that. And all those people I know who are sitting on those like those type of boards, which are obviously not as competitive as, maybe a state rep or something like that. But they, over the past couple of years, have basically said, like, I don't even want to get involved in that anymore because it's become so partisan. It used to be like, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, just because that's just the way it organized. And nobody seemed to care about that, in terms of the way the people voted. Has it, for state reps, it's been moving that way for quite some time, but it seems we've got to be really at the peak. Like, in other words, if I'm coming in to vote for Biden, what is my propensity to say I'm going D all the way down?
It's high. The number one predictor of how a Democratic state legislative candidate will perform is how the Democratic presidential candidate performs. That said, there are people who split tickets, and we see it really across the country. Candidates can, if they can get their message out and kind of have their own, if people are thinking, oh, well, I'm going to vote for Trump, but, I heard about this other guy, and hey, he has a lot of good ideas. And again, we think it's centering on issues that's all about improving people's lives. And things like increasing broadband access, that's a big deal, especially in rural areas. In Pennsylvania, they just expanded rural broadband. It's a pretty popular thing. Clean water. Regardless of your political affiliation, you don't want to drink poison. Good jobs, like increasing wages, increasing union membership. If you can kind of focus on those issues that really improve the lives of your constituents, then, that is how you can kind of break through the din and try to get someone who might vote for Trump at the top of the ticket to still vote for a Democrat down at the bottom of the ticket. And so when we talk about, what we're doing in state legislatures and raising money for them, what the money goes to is really basically getting that message out, trying to target voters best you can to say, hey, regardless of what you think about the presidential, this is, this person stands for this at the state legislative level and you should vote for them. And then the presidential race in a district kind of defines the universe of what those, of who you can get, basically.
And so one of your projects this year was to isolate different races in different and specific states mm-hmm. That were going to turn a legislature or maybe get to a supermajority or what, right? Do you want to tell us which ones those are?
Yeah. So, in future now we're involved in, I think, 13 states, in 2020, but, we focus our GiveSmart program, which is really our small donor program, in Arizona, Kansas, Montana, Michigan, North Carolina, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin.
All right. Slow down for a second. Arizona, Kansas, Montana, Michigan,
North Carolina, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin.
Okay. And why those states?
Those are the states where we think small donors can make a bigger difference because of how campaign finance laws are structured and where there's a real benefit into raising a lot of hard money. And so that's the easiest answer to it.
Well, what's happening on the ground in terms of in Arizona, what do we need to do for that state? Is that a situation where you're going to see the all three branches of the government go Democrat, or is that a more defensive position?
No. So in Arizona, we're Republicans hold a 1-seat majority in the House and a 2-seat majority in the Senate. And we think we can win both outright. One or two seats gets you a tie in either chamber, basically. And the governor is a Republican who's had a pretty bad COVID response. So I think the hope is you flip the chamber in 2020. You know, you can kind of stop the worst of it. You actually kind of force this guy to come to the table, maybe on things like the budget. And then in 2022, because he's screwed up the response so bad, hopefully you can beat him. And then you would get unified control of the state government.
And so Kansas, same deal?
Kansas actually, Kansas has a Democratic governor, but Republicans have super majorities in both chambers. So we're just trying to break the supermajorities and make so that they don't have a veto-proof, Republicans don't have a veto-proof supermajority. They've really, she's tried to have a good COVID response, and Republicans and legislature just wouldn't let her do it. And so we need to kind of allow her to push back, basically. And she's very popular. People think she's competent and a good governor, and we just need to be able to allow her to govern. And, you know, flipping the supermajority, bringing the supermajority in Kansas is a big part of that.
We should remind people that Sam Brownback, before he was, he had the opportunity from, I think it was 2012 maybe until 2016 or 2018.
2010 to 2018.
2010 to 2018 to implement it was almost like year zero for Republicans in their implementation of Arthur Laffer's theory about cutting taxes. I mean, in many respects, Donald Trump followed the same playbook, and it was a disaster for Kansas. I mean, it was such a disaster that they took Sam Brownback and they made him ambassador to faith, I think it was.
Yeah, they made a fake job. He implemented all the Chicago schools recommendations, and it was really a disaster for the state. And so, yeah, they gave him a fake job to get him out of there and try to win the governorship.
It's like if they had set him up in a satellite just to orbit the country so that he couldn't do any interviews with anybody. I think that's what they would do, because they were just afraid. And Democrats, did at least nationally a horrible job exploiting that huge disaster, because it really put to lie into bed any controversy over the idea that you could lower taxes and increase revenue because of it. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it gets back to the idea of when you're running for local government, it's all about, you know, improving lives. And in Kansas, it was literally like, we're going to cut tax. You know, it was this ideological crusade, you know, this Ayn Rand ideal. And what it meant for people was that all of a sudden, some pretty good schools became terrible. Yeah. And it was an absolute disaster for the state. And you basically, there for a long time, you actually had a split between, like, a meaningful ideological split in the Republican Party. There were some, you know, Kansas has been, you know, just, you know, culturally a Republican state forever. And so there were a lot of people who otherwise would probably be Democrats in other states who are Republicans. And so for a while, there was that split. But, you know, again, as the Republican Party has become more extreme, a lot of those moderates have been pushed out. And so now you really, like, you know, the lines are even starker. And so you're seeing more ideological sorting in Kansas than there had been in the past.
In Montana, what's the goal there?
Montana, we're hoping to flip the state house and make progress in the state Senate. It's one of the longer shots, I think, there, because in Montana, the districts are so small. We were kind of hoping, like, oh yeah, we can really send everyone door to door, COVID kind of. But the good news about Montana is, even if you make progress, there are some Republicans there who will engage in a governing majority with Democrats on some, like, budget things and stuff. So even progress there is pretty good. And again, you're setting yourself up well, ideally for 2022. Montana has fair districts. All the population growth is occurring in areas that are increasing in Democratic vote strength. So, you know, even if it ends up being a 2-cycle lift, and then ideally in 2022, Kansas will actually be able to go door to door again, hopefully.
Well, it's hope springs eternal. Michigan.
Michigan, we're trying to break the Republican majority in the state house. I don't know how much people have been paying attention to Michigan state politics, but they have some really extreme Republican legislators who show up at rallies with people who tried to kidnap the Democratic governor. And, you know, they let people roam around the state capitol armed with guns in the galleries to intimidate people. You know, it's another state where the COVID response looms large there. And, you know, ideally people are fed up. Democrats only need to flip 4 seats to win a state house majority there. It's really gerrymandered in Michigan. So you have to win some kind of Republican areas, but we still think that we can do it.
So four seats, and then who controls the Senate in Michigan?
So the Senate isn't up in 2020 in Michigan. That's a Republican majority there, but at the very least, you can prevent in Michigan, actually, there are some things that they could try to do without the governor. Basically, if you get enough signatures on a veto override from like 300,000 people in the state or something, both chambers can pass a law overriding the gubernatorial veto. And so they've been trying to use that on some of the COVID stuff. And if you're able to flip the Michigan House, you can put a stop to that tactic.
North Carolina.
North Carolina, we're trying to flip the House and the Senate in North Carolina. Again, the maps aren't great, but we really are seeing, North Carolina, the polling there, we're hopeful. And then I would say when you're following election results on election night, North Carolina, one of the first states to report, also one of the first states that'll report almost full results. So if you want to look at how some of our endorsees are doing, like Francis Jackson in Cumberland County or Amy Steele in Cabarrus County, those are kind of good bellwethers for what the national mood would be, I think. Because those are so Republican leaning districts, but we have Democratic candidates there who, if they're winning, that's a good sign for the rest of the country.
What counties are those in North Carolina?
So those races specifically are in Cumberland, which is, a traditionally Democratic area that I think Trump was kind of trying to gain inroads into. I'm not sure that he has. And then Cabarrus is outside Charlotte. It's traditionally a very conservative county, but it's one of those places where you have a new subdivision going up every month, and the people moving into those subdivisions aren't all Republicans. But if in North Carolina, if you're really looking for like the bellwether county for how things are going, I would say New Hanover County, which is Wilmington. That tends to go with how the state votes. We have kind of our model where we can run scenarios showing how it's, and so whenever we kind of run scenarios, New Hanover County always seems to reflect the statewide vote. So that's Wilmington area. I would check that out. And then also Adam Erickson running a state house race there too. See how he's doing as well. That's it's a Republican leaning seat, but if he's doing well, it's a good sign.
All right. That's good. Those are the type of things that we want to get out of you today, to figure out what we're looking at, to tell what's happening. New Hampshire, Wisconsin. I mean, the level of anxiety. You're a young man, but so you haven't been through too many of these. But the level of anxiety, I think, is just I've never seen it so widespread.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're on a plane that has a 95% chance of landing, you're still gripping the armrest.
Yeah, I'd say. Don't tell me that. We should say that airplanes have a much higher rate.
Yes, yes, it is close to 100%. And this is, a catastrophic voting polling error or just mass disenfranchisement, either of those things, they're certainly possible. And, but if you're worried about them, you can always try to do something productive. There's still about, about 30 hours left for people to go make calls and texts or even go door to door.
What's happening with New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, we're trying to basically Democrats flip the state Senate there in 2018 by only like a few hundred votes. And so they're trying to retain it. I feel good about that one. I would say New Hampshire is another early reporting state. If it looks like Democrats are losing in New Hampshire, that is a bad sign for the rest of the night. I would say, New Hampshire reporting doesn't always report out by county. Sometimes it's by municipality. But Coos County in the north, if that's blue, that's a really good sign. And then Rockingham County, if Trump's carrying Rockingham County, which is a lot of the Boston commuter bedroom communities, that's a place that Biden should win. Because it's like, it's typical suburban shifting toward Democrats. If he's not winning there, something's gone wrong.
So these suburban moderates that might be excited about the Republicans because of tax cuts, but supposedly fed up with how.
Yeah. And that gets to like, if that's where like the systematic polling error would come into play, like, because everything we have seen, not you know, not just since 2018, you know, not just since Trump was elected, but really since 2018. It's like, we think that the suburbs are trending Democratic, and that's why our candidates, like John Morgan, he's one of our guys, he represents part of Rockingham County. You know, he represents a pretty conservative district, but it's been trending Democratic and he's been able to hang on there. If he's losing, I get a little nervous because, you know, that's the type of area, the bedroom communities of Boston, formerly anti-tax, but now really kind of repulsed by Trump. Those are areas of the Democrats that we're basically counting on them to be able to flip. So if they're not flipping that, I get nervous.
All right. So Wisconsin, what are we looking for there?
So Wisconsin, you know, that is an interesting case because they've, you know, I think people know they've had one of the worst COVID outbreaks of anyone. And when that happened, the state we think is really moving away from Republicans quickly. We think it's really angry at kind of there, especially the state legislature basically refused to refused to go into session to do anything to address COVID. And so
primary, it seems like the primary election was sort of the inflection point for that. I just remember that one Republican, I don't know if he was the leader of the House or something. He was like, it's perfectly safe out here. And as you pull back on the camera, he is wearing like a hazmat suit.
Yes.
Like oven.
So his name is Robin Voss. He represents a pretty Republican district in normal circumstances. But we actually think that we might be able to knock him out. That would be like, you know, it's like, I don't know if we can knock out Mitch McConnell. We can knock out the Mitch McConnell of Wisconsin. So check out, I think it's district. I think it's 63. Sorry, 62. Yeah, 63. House District 63 in Wisconsin. Check it out. And normally very Republican district. Like if he wins, it's not necessarily, but like that would be a real cherry on top. This guy has prevented the Wisconsin legislature from doing anything to address the COVID epidemic. And you can see it's running and just, you know, people are partisan. It's part of like, it's really wrapped up in their identities. But when something like COVID is just raging, you know, it's your vote can sometimes transcend that kind of affiliation a little bit. And so if you're seeing him go down and it's unclear, it might be late in the night when that happens. So you might have a pretty good idea of how the rest of the election is going, but it'll be, you know, it'd be a really hopeful sign that, you know, you can only go so far. You can only bank on tribalism so much, and that people are going to look to public officials to do things that will address the things that are important to them, like stopping a pandemic.
That feels like low hanging fruit in terms of what you think you should be doing if you are a government official. But I guess that is in certain quarters, that's controversial. All right. So those are the state houses races that we're going to be looking at, your top nine. I know you got a couple more over on the state of the states at Future Now. But so you've given us in North Carolina, look to Cumberland County, Cabarrus County. And Hanover County is a big bellwether.
Well, New Hanover is the biggest bellwether. I would say look at the margins in Cumberland and Cabarrus. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, Cabarrus, you want to make sure that Trump's definitely below 60 in Cabarrus. I think that would be a pretty good sign. And then, you know, you definitely don't want to see him doing better in Cumberland County. Oh, just let me pull up my trusty simulator here so I can.
You don't have it memorized?
I don't have them quite memorized, but
really? Wow.
I don't have the exact, but I do know New Hanover, if Biden's carrying that, that's a good sign for the night. Yeah, so Cabarrus County, definitely you want to see Trump under 60. If Trump's at like 55 there, it's a great sign. Okay. And then Cumberland, similarly, you want to see, you know, ideally, Biden would be getting around 60 there. If he's a little below 60, that's fine. If Biden's going down to like 55 there, that's a bit of a red siren for at least North Carolina.
Okay, so that's North Carolina, New Hampshire. What else? What's the first like time in the evening where you're going to be like, I need to check in on this? This is the one I keep refreshing my page on. And when this tells me this, then I know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the problem with that this year is because we don't really know as well how things are going to report out. It's a little tougher to say it. And so, and just in general, like there'll be a lot of bad information flying around. So you have to be careful, but you know, you look at the earliest reporting states, If you really want to dig deep, you could, you know, Indiana and Kentucky are reporting first. I mean, you can always in Indiana. I mean, you know, we all know that Joe Donnelly lost there in 2018, but if Biden's coming close to the Joe Donnelly numbers, that's a great sign for him overall.
So if Biden's coming close to even coming close to the Joe Donnelly numbers.
Yeah. I mean, if I think back to 2016 and what I went through, I know it's difficult to revisit, but I remember when Indiana and Kentucky first came in, I was like, wow, Trump's getting amazing margin in these rural areas. If he can keep that up nationwide, imagine what would happen. And then it did happen. He had these outsized. And so, but at the same time, we're working with incomplete information. We're not sure, even at the state and county level, you're not entirely sure who's reporting what, when, and like what's outstanding. And there, you know, we all know about there's potential, the blue mirage or red mirage, depending right. on the state and what's reporting out.
I give the caveats, you give the numbers. That's the way
it works. All right. Okay. So you're giving out all the caveats. So another state that reports are
Kentucky. What? I'm looking at if Biden's numbers are beating Clinton numbers in Kentucky or what?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing that people kind of forget about this election is Biden only has to do a little better than Clinton to win.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, you look to see if, you know, if Trump's improving over 2016 anyway. And it goes back, you know, like I said, I've been looking at these district level polls since June, and I really haven't seen that happen very much. So, you know, that's a sign that something is amiss if Trump's like consistently outperforming his numbers, again, with all those caveats that we give. Okay. And then the next group of states to report would be like Ohio and Virginia, I know, are in that. And so we were in Virginia in 2019. And so there are two areas that I would look to hopefully be shifting toward Biden. And that would be Chesterfield County and Virginia Beach. So hopefully those areas are, if you want to see him winning those, that would be a pretty good sign. But also one thing with Virginia is because Tim Kaine was on the ticket in 2016, political science literature does indicate that there is a bit of a home state boost. So it's actually not fatal if they're not really improving on Virginia numbers that much. Ohio, on the other hand, seems to be doing a lot better in 2020 than 2016. So, Trumbull County, which is on the border with Pennsylvania, a traditionally Democratic area that went for Trump. You'd want to see that bounce back. That would be a heartening sign. If not, it's a little worrisome. Okay. And then, if you want to see Biden actually carry Ohio, which they certainly seem to think is possible, Wood and Portage counties, which are kind of they're a mixture of like colleges, suburbs, and farmlands. So they're really kind of like microcosms.
Portage, you said?
Portage and Wood.
Okay. Wow. These are good. So we now have like a real viewing guide. And again, we're not going to know. We can't know. These numbers are not hard and fast, and they're going to be dynamic. But we're looking for trends. If all of these places go in the direction it seems by the time we get to like 7:30, 8 p.m. at night, we're going to be feeling pretty good about it, right?
It's possible. I think North Carolina will report a big batch out at 7:30. And so that should tell us a lot.
What are we looking for in North Carolina?
Again, it's New Hanover County if you want your presidential bellwether. And then Florida also reports out pretty quickly, pretty early. And Seminole County, which is a traditionally Republican suburban county. We also got our candidates, Tracy Kagan and Pasha Baker there that we're backing. And so keep an eye on them. But, you know, Seminole County, if Biden can flip Seminole County, that's a pretty good sign for Florida. Also, Pinellas and Duval counties as well. Those tend to be bellwethers.
And that's it. So those are all the counties that you're going to be looking at, right?
Well, I'm looking at about 400 state legislative races, trying to herd cats, trying to figure out what's going on with those. So I'll be in my little bunker. But on election night, I'm going to be pretty busy, but we'll be shouting out all the candidates who win our important races over at Future Now USA. So that'll be a way for people to keep track on Twitter.
They'll follow you on your Twitter. Are you not going to be doing it on your own?
I got 400 state legislative races I got to track. I'm going to be a busy man. I don't know if I'll be able to weigh in on Twitter that much, but our
how do you physically do that? Do you just open up your, you have like three monitors and you have tabs open on every one and you're just recycling, refreshing each one of these things?
I have a lot of help. We have you know, some very I have some great coworkers, and we also have a great team of volunteers that we have that will be helping us out as well. And yeah, so I'm kind of just trying to jump from tab to tab, seeing what's going on, trying to figure out, you know, what the story is from all this, because together, all the numbers should tell a story, and we'll start learning what that story is tomorrow night. We'll have a fuller picture of it a week from then, and an even fuller picture kind of as we go out and elections get certified, and we try to see what happened.
And do you also have a mechanism, like if there's any voting irregularities that they're dealing with there?
Usually some, I think it's if someone on a campaign or in that state will flag something to us, it's like, this looks really weird. I'll take this with a grain of salt. We're going to try to figure out what's going on.
Well, Aaron Kleiman, Director of Research, Future Now, and the Future Now Fund. Folks can find it over at futurenow.org. And your State of the States report, still one of my favorite documents. Thank
you. We'll see how right I was.
We will. We will. And I will let you know about it, too.
All right, Sam. Sounds good.
Good morning, Aaron.
All right. Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, folks, quick break, back in just a minute. We're back. Folks, this is a, if you are, find yourself by having any questions or confusion or any problems that you encounter in your, voting, like if there's crazy long lines, if there are polling places that are closing, if there are problems with locations, if there's any intimidation, take down this, this number. This is the Democratic Voter Hotline. It is 833-336-8683. That's 833-336-8683. And if you need text-based instead of a phone, you can text the word ACCESS, A-C-C-E-S-S, to the number 43367. And in Espanol, it's 866-296-8686. Again, for Spanish speakers, 866-296-8686. We'll put that on our podcast and show description. That is the Democratic Voter Assistance Hotline. You can call if you're a Republican and, you know, but, you know, talk about how you see other, maybe other Republicans intimidating people from voting. I don't know how that would work out, but check that out. We will, again, put that in our descriptions today, and you can find it at majority.fm. So here is the closing argument from the Trump campaign. I think they're still saying Sleepy Joe. I'm not sure. They are... they're still convinced about that Hunter Biden has like multiple laptops, apparently. But none of that seems to be working very well. So what they're going for is we're going to try and play the angle of when the votes come in. Here is Jason Miller on ABC This Week echoing what Donald Trump has been saying and what that Axios report was, that, that Trump is going to try and declare himself the winner, if it's even remotely close, on election night. And here's Jason Miller trying to already set the frame. Listen to this.
And the one final thing, George, if you speak with many smart Democrats, they believe that President Trump will be ahead on election night, probably getting 280 electorals, somewhere in that range. And then they're going to try to steal it back after the election. We believe that we will be over 290 electoral votes on election night. So no matter what they try to do, what kind of hijinks or lawsuits or whatever kind of nonsense they try to pull off, we're still going to have enough electoral votes to get President Trump reelected.
So basically, for you're saying that the president needs to have a clean sweep of all the states in the Sun Belt that he won back in 2016, Arizona, Georgia, Florida, Texas, North Carolina.
I said I believe that we're going to win all of them.
Now, the thing that's interesting here is that they're claiming that they will have these electoral votes based upon vote tallies that are not complete. So the implication is here that they're going to try that by continuing to count the ballots, Democrats are going to be attempting to steal the election. That's the dynamic that they're going for here, and they're trying to create this narrative. Donald Trump is out there talking about going to keep finding ballots, and more ballots are going to come in. And I want to remind people of two things. One, the idea, well, one is that Paul Ryan, who was considered one of the supposed normal Republicans, or one of the moderate Republicans, or the responsible Republicans, who was allowed to go on every television show and speak as if he, when Donald Trump started talking about the ballots coming in from California, because you'll recall in California, it takes weeks to get the final tally in. Weeks, because they're counting so many ballots. Paul Ryan was going out there and saying, this is very suspicious. What's going on? Creating this sense of you cannot trust the idea that it would take some time for people to count some ballots. And the other thing is not only is, you know, Donald Trump is not somehow inconsistent or some type of aberration in terms of the Republican Party. You had Paul Ryan supporting that idea, and you've had Republicans talking about suppressing the vote since 1980. Paul Weyrich was getting in front of what would ultimately become the moral majority and saying, we want less votes. That's how we get leverage. Weyrich became the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, of the American Legislative Exchange Council. He coined the phrase moral majority. This is a Republican tradition. We'll see you tomorrow. Make sure you go vote. All right. And for those of you sticking around, oh, just a reminder. Tomorrow is our 10-year anniversary for this program. And joining me after the first hour, for the first time, making her debut appearance on the program as a member of the team, as it were, Emma Viglin will be here. And we're actually going to be in studio together. We're going to do this. I'm not going to do it too often, but occasionally. But I am looking as I speak. Over my shoulder at the beginnings of, and I've got to do some refining of plastic tarp. It looks like a construction site. The office is a complete disaster. It's a complete disaster in here. Cause it's only been me in here, like just ripping apart boxes and setting up new stuff. And it's such a shame too, cause we had such a beautiful sort of like set. You know, and now it's just sort of like this strange Frankenset. Folks, don't forget, is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Tomorrow, you know, if I had a better sense of these things, we would have all sorts of like hijinks planned for tomorrow. I don't know. I guess, you know, the most foresight I've ever shown, and it really wasn't just, it wasn't me, it was more Brendan, but I actually answered him when he asked me, we reserved a venue almost a year ago for tomorrow that we were going to use. It was going to be like a 12-hour extravaganza. We were going to be in this big, we were going to be maybe music, and I mean, it would have been crazy, right? And, oh, right. Okay. Oh, we got Ben?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right, good. All right, well, let's bring Ben Wickler on. Folks, the chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Ben, is that, can you hear me? Is that the, is that his specific, do you call yourself the chairman of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin?
Yes, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin chair. I am switching webcams for maximum color correction effect.
There you go.
Boom. There we go. That's better.
That is impressive. So you've got like multiple camera angles?
I have an external monitor with a crappy cheap webcam. And then I have my laptop that has the better looking one. And so this is my Sam Cedar webcam. You know what I'm saying? I bring out the very best in webcam technology when I'm talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I was just going over that tomorrow is the 10-year anniversary of this iteration of the program, if you can believe it. And you, back when we were in that little crappy closet, you came by to help us out at one point, too.
I remember vividly. I remember, and then I remember you, well, are you thinking of that room, the windowless room that was yes. like a big cube? Yeah. I learned a lot from your setup. That became the inspiration for my own cube-like studio from back in my podcasting days.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't have a chance to see this new studio because it looks it's much nicer. Of course, it was nicer. Now it's just like there's plastic draped everywhere, and it doesn't it's all strange. So Ben, Wisconsin, there's a lot riding on it, but I have to say, like we were just talking to Aaron Kleiman from Future Now, and it feels like Wisconsin has been, and you've done an amazing job there in your role. I mean, the fundraising and just the energy around there, and particularly with the primary. It seems like the primary was a huge inflection point and like a pivot point for really the past decade. I mean, I guess it was 9 years ago, I was out in Madison covering the protests. Right when this was it was the first thing we did 3 months into the show, and everything went sideways with Scott Walker. There was a failure to recall him, and it was a failure to sort of turn that energy into voting people out. And it feels like the primary this year, because of the Republicans basically saying to Wisconsinites, like, yeah, we don't care about your health. That seemed to change everything. Is that, or you tell me?
So I think that the untold story of Wisconsin is a progressive movement that Republicans tried to smash with a sledgehammer for a decade that refused to break. This is, you know, they went after unions. They dissected them hammer and tong. Then they went after young people. They went after Black Wisconsinites with these insanely harsh voter ID laws and then moving DMVs out of city centers. Everything they could do, rewriting campaign finance laws, making it so gerrymandered that Democrats could win 54% of the assembly vote in 2018, and Republicans got 64 of the legislative seats, or 63 of them, I should say. This kind of massive assault on democracy, and people kept working and organizing, and I think you saw the result of that in the spring. But that wave, I mean, it carried through in 2018, where despite all of that, Wisconsin came out with Democrats winning every statewide office for the first time since 1982. And that energy is continuing to this moment. I mean, we have thousands and thousands of people making phone calls to voters right now. And that has been true day after day after day. And the kind of organizing energy, the way that grassroots organizations are pouring in their work. And then I'm so proud of what our party activists have been able to do in Wisconsin on the official integrated with the Biden campaign operation, which is in every corner of the state. There's this national storyline that red areas get redder, blue areas get bluer, but we're seeing movement in our direction in every region of Wisconsin. And that's, contrary to the script,
but it reflects the fact that people are just like pulling out all the stops around the clock.
So what are the what are the big races? I mean, is it that you're I mean, obviously the presidential race, right? Wisconsin, pretty important in that regard.
Significant, yes.
I understand last time it didn't work out as well. But there's, I mean, it seems to me that there's like two different things that are going on. Like one, I know you got like some state house races that you're looking at. And also on some level, people are starting to talk about Ron Johnson, like that maybe this is a good way to sort of create an infrastructure in which to take him on. So what, aside from Joe Biden coming out the victor, and hopefully it will be really nice if you guys could wrap this up early in the evening, but what else is on the ballot? Like I know during the primary, there was a big Supreme Court race. Still unbalanced court, at least in terms of progressives. I know they don't have it Republican or Democrat there, but what else is on the docket for you guys? Like what, like when you have your big board, because I know you have a big board in there.
See, I've got the Wisconsin Gerrymandering Museum right here behind me.
Well enough that, I mean, I've told the story a million times before when I've walked down, I saw like you as a producer, back in the days, you like big boards and keep it organized. So I know there's a big whiteboard in there somewhere. What is on that board?
So fundamentally, the most significant battlegrounds are these state legislative races and the presidency. We also have congressional races across the state. There's 5 Republican-held seats. There's 1 Democratic seat. Republicans are coming after hard. I think we're going to hold them off. And then there are local races around the state. But the state legislature is really the crux of it. Republicans gerrymandered our state, as I was saying, super intensely. And their goal this year was to get super majorities in both the state assembly and the state senate. And they talked to press about that. They pitched donors about that. They have like multiple dark money groups. So if you watch a show on cable TV in the Milwaukee suburbs, there might be 4 different attack ads from different organizations in the same commercial block going after Dems. And their big goal was to get enough power to re-gerrymander the state for another decade, despite Governor Evers, a Democrat, being in the governor's mansion. And that goal looked pretty frighteningly tenable a few months ago. At this point, I'm feeling, knock on all available wood, but I'm feeling really good about beating them back and actually flipping Republican-held seats in not everywhere, but there's a bunch where we're in competition, especially around Milwaukee, but in multiple regions of the state, closer to Dane County, northeastern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin. Like we're fighting really hard in a whole lot of different races that weren't supposed to be on the map. And I will be watching that like a hawk. I will also say our plan for this year was spelled out WISCO. So the W was win the spring election, use that as a dress rehearsal for the fall. So that's what you're talking about with the state Supreme Court race on April 7th, where the GOP forced in-person voting right as the pandemic was starting. And we mobilized, roughly 1 million absentee ballots in that election, which had, 4 times what anyone had ever seen. And the we there is the big we of the party, the grassroots organizations, unions, all the people who were working on that. Won that fight by 10 percentage points. So W and WISCO win the spring. I and WISCO was Inspire Recruit, trained thousands of volunteers during our national convention, which was in Milwaukee in some sense. It was virtual, but we held this massive virtual training. The S is for Save the Veto, stop the supermajorities. The C is cancel Trump's second inaugural, which is the presidential big kahuna. And then the O is organized for the long term, including stop Ron Johnson, make sure he is ends his Senate career in 2022, reelect our governor, lieutenant governor, treasurer, state attorney general, fight to flip both chambers of the legislature, because we'll have new maps after 2020, after the census, the U.S. House races, like build the infrastructure for year-round organizing and long-term strength so that we don't have a 2022 that looks like 2010 when we lost everything after having a blue trifecta.
So, all right, I just wanted to go back to that one thing about, the legislature and the maps and this and that. I when we talk about the, like a failure of, or an assault on democracy, Wisconsin State House is one of like the prime examples in the country. I mean, you already mentioned this fact, but I've stated on this program maybe 3 times, maybe once a week, the idea that 54% of the people went in and voted for a Democrat, And yet they have 63%. The Republicans won 63%. Like, people need to like sit back and sort of figure out how that's even possible. And it sounds like it's impossible, but it's just that the way that the things have been redistricting, people came in, they voted, you know, more than 5 out of 10 times for the Democrat. And yet more than 6 out of 10 seats went to the Republicans. So how do you fix that? I mean, how do you break that sort of self-fulfilling, that feedback loop there? Because once they're in a position of getting an inordinate amount, they're no longer accountable to the voters, essentially. They have the ability to draw their own maps. I mean, how do you break that cycle?
So you can see the strength of that cycle in 2018. After the whole blue wave came in, we had not flipped a single state assembly seat in the entire period since the new maps were drawn. And in 2018, we won one of them by 132 votes. So in that year when we had the 54% vote for state assembly, that's how just incredibly finely the maps are drawn. They cut sometimes through the middle of a block, through people's backyards or the median in the middle of the street. And that seat, the Republicans targeted with everything they had to try to take it back, as well as to try to take back several of the more rural districts held by Democrats that had gone blue. And we built this plan called Save the Veto with Governor Evers and with our state legislative caucuses, where we went out and just raised money and worked with some of the best ad people and, you know, digital people to build these big plans, almost like congressional races, for these state legislative seats that Republicans were trying to grab. And eventually, I mean, I think we've pretty much scared them out of several of the races that they thought they were going to be really competitive in. And then in the last couple of months, we're now on offense in a bunch of races that Republicans didn't expect to have to try to defend. But all of that gets us to the point it will have next year when we actually have the new census, and then we can draw new legislative maps. Because we have the governor can veto gerrymandered maps when Republicans try to do it again, unless they get supermajorities. We can veto those maps. Republicans can try to go to state court. Because we won the spring Supreme Court election, that at least provides some buffer against the most extreme kinds of judicial overrides Republicans might try to do. And there's one justice who sort of swings back and forth on the state Supreme Court a bit. So I think we have a path to getting better maps by 2022. And that is the prime directive. That is the key to restoring democracy in the state. As long as we have these like outrageously drawn maps, Republicans only worry about primary elections. They only look at threats from their right. And the only question that they have to answer is, have they made the Republican leader, Robin Voss, happy? Because he controls the spigots of their funding through their Republican, you know, assembly caucus, the equivalent of like Mitch McConnell's operation. And so he rules with an iron fist, and he can get them to do things that would be incredibly unpopular because we've polled in their districts. We know their constituents don't like it. They, in Wisconsin, they haven't passed a single bill in the last 6 months in the midst of this giant upswing in coronavirus. What they have done is sued to remove our governor's ability to do things like stay at home orders unless the legislature passes a rule. And so they, like, if you look at why Wisconsin has such an explosive coronavirus outbreak, look at our state legislative Republicans. They grabbed the power. That was built on using the power grab they did after Evers was elected, where they moved rulemaking authority to the state legislature and away from the governor. And then they used that to torpedo our coronavirus control. So, I mean, that there's people are furious with them as a result. Their public support is in the toilet. But we have to turn that into votes in this final day.
Well, I got to say, I mean, I'm encouraged just by the fact that people are reacting to that type of, frankly, insanity. It would be really discouraging if people like didn't notice. So it's encouraging that they're noticing. All right. So if people want to help out in your effort, what do they got to do? Is there anything left to be done for the next 24 hours?
Absolutely. Get on the phone. After you should finish watching this episode of the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, and then you should go to wisdems.org/phonebank. wisdems.org/phonebank. We are running phone banks, you know, morning till night, and those calls are totally critical. At this point, we're telling people who have absentee ballots, there's still like 175,000 of them who haven't returned them, bring them to a drop box, bring them to your clerk's office. And then for folks who haven't voted yet, you can go to the polls tomorrow. So much has been learned since this spring. It will be safe tomorrow. There will be safeguards in place. There's plexiglass, there's masks they'll hand out to people when they go in. So go and cast your ballot. And in Wisconsin, you can same day register. So if, you know, if you're not registered, this is the one thing Republicans failed to dismantle. You can still bring your proof of residence and your ID and go to the polls, register to vote, cast your ballot on the same day. And it's all hands on deck. Wisconsin, you know, the polling looks good. And we have this history of polling leads collapsing very rapidly at the end. And so we were taking nothing for granted in the last stretch.
All right. What's that address again?
WISDEMS, wisdems.org/phonebank.
And I will say that the reason why the Koch brothers and the AFP and Scott Walker started with Wisconsin, I think, in this like sort of latest iteration of their assault on democracy was because of the history that Wisconsin had in the progressive movement in terms of unions and whatnot. And I think they felt like if we can do it here, we can do it anywhere. And they did roll out a lot of stuff through ALEC that they had basically piloted in Wisconsin. You know, the whole notion of, you know, so-called right to work, states and, on a national level, the Janus ruling in many respects, a lot of that was born in that pilot program, if you will, by Scott Walker in Wisconsin. So to take back Wisconsin, it's not going to happen overnight, but a lot of it's already taken place. Ben Wickler, thanks so much for showing up today. Good luck.
Thank you, Sam. Good luck to all of us. And I hope every one of your viewers get some nice conversations with Wisconsin voters in the next 36 hours.
Right. You can talk about cheese and stuff like that.
That's great.
All right, Ben. Bye. Appreciate it. All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half. We will put a link to wisdems.org there too. So check that out. Don't forget, you can support this program by becoming a member. Join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. They're in Madison. Just Coffee. Co-op just outside of town. Not even outside of town. And they were giving out coffee to people for free during those protests back in the day. So, hopefully, sitting down, drinking your Just Coffee, calling Wisconsin voters would be a big help. Also, don't forget the AM Quickie. 7 minutes of your headline news in the morning. It's there when you wake up. For most people. I don't know. I guess some people wake up way early. And don't forget, she's not on this afternoon, but she will be on tomorrow afternoon and every rest of the day of the week. Nomi's show starts at 1 p.m. at youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show. Nomi Key Show. And you can find that at patreon.com/TheNomiKey Show as well. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada?
I'm so glad you asked. Well, this week on the Antifada, you know what? I'll start with last week. Maybe you want to escape a little bit. Maybe you want to watch some scary movies to escape from scary reality. We had an episode come out Wednesday where I talked with Heather Fortune and Leslie Lee about two different horror movies, Host and Society. And then Friday, we had a bonus ep where Andy talks about Beetlejuice with the Lit Crit guy. Very good stuff there. And then this week on Wednesday, we have a very topical but also evergreen episode where we talk to the Angry Workers of the World. They are a collective out of London, and they really wanted to root their analysis in the working class. So they, for the past 6 years now, have been living in West London and doing minimum wage jobs in food manufacturing and logistics and whatnot, and just conducting a very deep workers' inquiry. And they have a new book out called Class Power on 0 Hours. So we talked to them a little bit about their project and got down to some of the nitty gritty details of what it would take to have a revolution in the UK, considering bringing in all of their knowledge of supply lines and food manufacturing and all of that stuff. I thought it was a really fascinating conversation that's coming out on Wednesday. Post-election, oh boy, patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Hopefully post-election. Yeah. Matt,
What's happening with TMBS?
Yeah, TMBS, we're going to do a live show, I think, on Wednesday night. I mean, I think it depends what happens on Tuesday, what that is like. So, you know, stay tuned for that, folks.
You got to clean up the noise coming off that mic.
Oh, no. Is it bad again?
Oh, you get all sorts of like electrical noises.
Ugh.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. Probably not going to go too long today in the fun half because tomorrow is a 12-hour show. 12 hours from noon to midnight. You know, I suppose if the election's over at like 10:30, maybe we'll just do it to 11:30 because the drinking will be so intense that I'll pass out.
Lol.
And or it's possible that, you know, the election won't be over by 10:30 and then we'll be drinking so hard because the election's not ending. So, I don't know. But so we're going to go a little short today, but make sure you join us tomorrow. We will be live starting at noon until midnight.
Oh boy.
In for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy.
Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerty song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerty.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks, reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black.
See, Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't not hustle.
Come on! Fuck 'em. Fuck. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black, black.
Come on! What? Come on! What? Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.